Quincy Jones, Soul Bossa Nova, right here on First Degree Liberty. I'm Mike, and on today's show, we're going retro because we're going to be talking about hippies, dirty hippies, communes, anarcho-communists, and how we can all get them together. It's going to be a little bit of an interesting twist because joining Chase and I for this show is Chase's friend Mark from the Blue Ridge Liberty Project. So check us out right here because this is going to be a good show. Welcome to episode 21 of First Degree Liberty, anarcho-communists, communes, and dirty hippies.
Okay, guys, today we have a very special topic, and this topic is a really cool one, I like to think, because I think it's going to kind of expanding this discussion into more realms of our lives is really going to help us unite people, the people around this world who have a common hatred of the state. And that is, we're going to talk about the compatibility or the incompatibility of collectivist and capitalist philosophies. Now, fortunately, with me here, I have Mark Synthesis.
I'm Mark Van Gelder. I'm an anarchist. I'd consider myself a synthesis anarchist, which is an anarchist who tries to unite the different sort of economic philosophies of anarchism to try to create sort of a solid, like, one anarchism without adjectives label. Sort of to work on, like, to piggyback on the work of Volin, who tried to unite the syndicalists and the communists, and he failed because he said that in order for you to accept this synthesis, you have to acknowledge that communism is the most true form of anarchism, and I didn't really go over too well with the syndicalists because that wasn't what they wanted. So, but in this case, I'm trying to get the communists and the syndicalists, which are sort of the more traditional anarchists, and try to bring them into the fold of anarchist capitalism or voluntarism as sort of the linchpin that they can unite the two and I think it could work if the message could actually get out there.
Right, and here's the general theory, and I'll posit it for our listeners, because we're gonna be able to unite these two seemingly incompatible ideas without having to compromise any of our sacred capitalist or private property principles, okay? So basically, the way you unite the two philosophies is they each have to have one stipulation. And the stipulation with the capitalist side is already inherent in capitalism. That is, it has to be voluntary, right? And the collectivism isn't necessarily inherent in collectivism, but it can be, which is has to be voluntary, right? So, for instance, let's say we're in a free anarcho-capitalist society, okay? And we have a community, let's say Eugene, Oregon, right? And there's a lot of collectivists there. They believe in socialism, but they're not violent people. They're not coercive. And they say, hey, let's create a commune. Let's just take the property we've actually justly acquired and let's pull it with other people who we trust and like and want to be part of our community and kind of create this community to wherever there is no really money or exchanges. It's just everyone's kind of doing their own thing, doing what they're good at and helping each other as they see fit as is needed basis, right? And so one can see it in this way how you can have communes so long as they're voluntary in membership, right? You can have communes all spread out within a capitalist society because it being voluntary, as a capitalist, you believe you can do whatever you want to with your property. And this includes pulling it with other people. And this includes sharing with other people. Capitalism does not preclude these activities, which could be collectivist in nature. Now, you may, as a capitalist, have some economic critiques as to the efficiency of such a system. However, this system does not violate private property by any means necessary. So the two can really coexist under, however, I would posit, and I think Mark actually agrees, it would have to be in an over overarching anarcho-capitalist society, not an overarching anarcho-communist
Yeah,
society.
because anarchist communism, the one main flaw that I think tends to make it not really a truly anarchist philosophy is that they believe in the abolition of property around the world. And not everybody, particularly here in the United States, not everybody wants to go to a collectivist style society. And if you're going to enforce or force people to become part of that society and to operate on collectivist principles, that really is more authoritarianism, and that's basically the same thing as Marxism.
It's a state, isn't it?
It's a state,
Yeah.
but if the collective activity or the communist activity were entirely voluntary, that wouldn't necessarily contradict the ideas of capitalism. That wouldn't necessarily contradict any of the ideas of voluntarism. And I think that a lot of people can be convinced that if they operate in a voluntary manner, it really does not matter what kind of economic philosophy or economic system they're part of, as long as all human interactions are free and not without coercion.
Right, that
So
makes a lot of sense, especially since you can you don't have to take part in a capitalist system if you're in that sort of anarcho-capitalist world. You can pool your resources, farm your own food, make your own clothing, and you could trade, even if you wanted to trade, with other people in the world, with that in the this overarching society, with those goods. So you could totally exist without any contradiction to the general principle. So wouldn't you think then that anarcho-capitalist is that perfect kind of anarchy then?
I would posit, Mike, that anarcho-capitalist or anarcho-capitalism is actually kind of a redundant term, right?
Right.
That if anarchy truly is the absence of coercion, well, I don't know, because capitalism kind of implies that there is that private property is just, and it kind of implies a just way of acquiring it,
Yes,
right?
but
So I guess it's
isn't
not.
the definition of anarchy no rulers?
No, you see, I don't like that definition of no rulers because if it's your property, you're the ruler over your own property. But you're a just ruler because you're the one who, you're either the one who discovered it first and mixed your labor with it and turned it into something valuable and made it yours, or you acquired it through voluntary trade of other justly acquired property. So you can still be the ruler over your own property, but what you can't do is force other people to give up their property. Or to do anything against their will, right? So, and that's the difference. So, yeah, I think anarcho-capitalists would be the unified theory, if maybe we can approach it better. And perhaps it might be a linguistic stigma which is kind of preventing this synthesis from happening. So maybe free market anarchist might be a better term to try to synthesize
Right, because you're right. The word capitalist kind of conjures up the monopoly man with his top hat and, greedily stomping on the little guy.
Now, here's why I want to anarcho-capitalist today to not only accept these ideas as compatible, but to actually exercise them in this extenuating circumstances. Because right now, the situation we're in is very volatile economically. So it's in our best interest to create these communes with people we trust, where we can have our own energy resources, farm our own food, that all the basic essentials. Which can be provided separate and distinct from the greater economic structure, which is regulated and controlled by the state. So I would actually encourage people to kind of engage in these communes. That's kind of what we're doing in the Blue Ridge Liberty Project. What we want to do is have these kind of self-sufficient communes, not because we think they're more efficient than a completely free market with division of labor, but because that isn't an option right now, and because we need to find some sort of way to insulate us from the looming economic collapse. And here's another cool thing about the synthesis kind of theory is you're not in this sort of society either necessarily having to be completely anarcho-communist or completely anarcho-capitalist. You can live in this commune and travel outside of it every now and then to actually commit commerce with other people in a very capitalist fashion if you wanted to, and then come back to your community later. It doesn't require you to stay in this area, so it's you can have different mixes of the two. I spend most of my time connecting commerce with other people through the division of labor and through using money, or I spend And the other little time is spent in the commune, or vice versa. So it could be all sorts of different mixes, and then one doesn't necessarily have to preclude the other, right?
Right. You mentioned the power, electricity kind of thing as an important thing. And I agree. You got to look at our power system in this country is 150 years old, and it's still using the same technology, or maybe a little less than 150 years. But the bottom line is they're still having power lines on telephone poles that are strung, you know, between buildings.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous, as we've seen here on the East Coast with Hurricane Sandy, that places in the civilized world, this is considered the first world, the most civilized places, probably the most civilized place in the entire world of sort of the New York City tri-state area. And a hurricane comes along and the people here are without power for weeks. And that's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I'd be totally – or go ahead.
I was gonna say it kind of makes you wonder what those code inspectors are actually doing.
Yeah, you know, there's this. I think that if we brought back Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla to the future, to 2013, they'd be sorely disappointed that we have not evolved any further in the realm of electronic technology of how to deliver power to people. So for me, I would love the idea of moving to a place with other voluntarists, with other people in a commune, even if it was just a cul-de-sac in a neighborhood somewhere where, you know, one guy did the farming, another guy, you know, had his solar panels and provide electricity for everybody else, you know, and you kind of divide the labor up that way. That would be great. You know, a great way to live the principles of voluntarism and not deal with the government. Because right now we're kind of forced to deal with the government. And if we want electricity, we have to go to the power companies, which are kind of cartels and monopolies. So yeah, it would be great to get past that hurdle of
well,
power.
That's the cool option of these little communities or enclaves, if you will, is. They don't even have to be collectivists. They don't have to be. I mean, you could have, like you said, division of labor and trade with an alternative currency and use that as to purchase other goods, like the food that the guy next to you makes or whatever. Or you could do direct barter if you're going to be an enclosed community because they're going to need food and you're going to need power. And, you know, so
yeah. Or they have, you know, some communes are like based around a gift economy. You know, where somebody says they want something, and if you're willing to give it up, you give it to them as a gift rather than the physical trade.
Right, and I like this much better than what we know today as the welfare state, because in a gift economy, like Mark talks about, it's a smaller community. First of all, so people are held more accountable, and second of all, it's going to be in their best interest to say, hey, there's lots of people who want these things, so I'm not just going to give it to someone just because they say they want it. I'm going to say, okay, well, what do you want it for? What do you need it for? And they're going to kind of determine how much they need it. And if they're just taking stuff, not giving anything in return, they're kind of could be like, people are going to be like, kind of, what the fuck, you know?
Right.
What are you providing to people? And if they're not providing anything, you're not going to like put a gun to them and make them provide.
You just
ostracize them. I mean, there's all sorts of voluntary means that can make this work better than the current welfare state. I mean, is it my preferred economic system, the ideal? Yeah. No. But I think it can work great as an interim solution to insulate us from this economic collapse coming.
That's great, because what are we going to do? I mean, we all know it's coming, especially, you know, people in the anarcho-capitalist philosophy. We all know this is unsustainable. So we have to kind of prepare for eventual collapse, or at least, you know, food shortages and food riots. So these kind of things would be great.
We need guns, goddammit.
Guns, too. Guns. Yeah, well, you know.
They're going to be coming to our little communities trying to take our shit, man.
That's occurred to me. And I think at some point, you know, these sort of voluntarists have great imaginations. And because I sit there sometimes and I think about these scenarios. Like, all right, if we were in the zombie apocalypse, you know, how are we going to rebuild society in the midst of all this chaos? And my thoughts are, well, let's turn to the ideas of sort of voluntarism and division of labor, and let's figure this out. Like, let's, you know, retreat to our you know, a commune or a property that we could defend. And some guys take up the defense, Some guys grow the food, some guys do the electricity, other things, and we all trade with each other. I think that's perfectly a perfect realm, a way of building back society.
Yes, and this is directly in contrast to the state. So people are like, well, what's the difference between that and a state? It's just a state on a micro scale. Well, no, it's not. Because the difference is, and it's a key difference, the difference is the people providing these services within this community who are exercising control over whatever they're exercising control over are things which they had justly acquired,
right?
Either through, again, original appropriation, meaning that they're the first ones to use this item and mix their labor with it, whatever, or voluntary trade. It's actually justly theirs. The state, in contrast, dictates and edicts over property, which they never even touched most of the time, which they have nothing to do with, no just claim over whatsoever. So it's not a difference in function, because a lot of the same services the state provides are going to be provided on the private market as well. So it's not a difference in function. It's a difference in type as far as who is exercising control over what. So in this case, it's people are exercising control over their justly owned property, whereas in the state is a group of people who are exercising control over property which is not theirs, which they have no claim over. And that's what the big difference is.
Right. I think that's all I can think of to say about it.
Yeah. And that is that. Yeah, I know. Me and Mark are talking about this last night a lot. And it's funny. I was talking about, and I'm sure Mark can talk about some misconceptions of communism. I was talking about how there's this kind of skewed view of capitalism from the communist side of, like, we're just the over-consumers, and we're just consuming for the sake of consuming, and these self-indulgent, you know, debauchery-ridden pigs and whatever. And really, that what they're describing isn't capitalism. It's Keynesianism, which is a mixed economy, right? That's the real guys who just want to consume, 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 spend, spend, spend. You look at Austrian economics, which is real free market theory, and the most amount of emphasis is placed upon savings and investments,
right?
You know, deferring immediate consumption for greater future gains. So I think that's kind of neat to point out.
Right. I hate using the word capitalist too, because it seems like there's no way to redeem the word.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's hard. It's hard. Anybody on the far left is like, you know, they use this word capitalist like it's an epithet. And that all basically, in my view, stems down or boils down to Karl Marx's class theory, you know, because the capitalists are the bad guys because they're the ones who, you know, control all the means of production. And they're the ones who control and basically own the people. And when you know, you have a very select few people that really do own most of the wealth in the country, and they are the ones who, you and I have to, if we want to have like a regular life, you know, typically would have to go find a job if we're not particularly entrepreneurially inclined. So, you know, that's not, I like what Konkin did with his sort of alteration of Marxism, you know, rather than look at society as a capitalist, bourgeoisie, and proletariat class. Instead, you have basically like three classes, which are the entrepreneurs, the productive class, and the parasitical class. And you know, if you take a look at the two philosophies, Marxism and agorism, and you compare their class theory, typically the people that they blame as being the worst people in society are typically the same people. It's just agorism uses the idea of free markets and non-coercion to show why the so-called capitalists are the bad guys, even though they refer to themselves as capitalists themselves.
Right.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I like the word capitalism because I think it's accurate. I just think it's been bastardized, right? I think it's been co-opted and it's been, you know, perverted. I don't think we've ever experienced truly capitalist society, but I do agree with a lot of the Marxist criticisms and communist and leftist criticisms of the super rich and their exploitations and their predations on the proletariat and people like ourselves.
Right.
But they're only able to do this insofar as they're able to exercise coercive power, either indirectly through purchasing state powers or politicians, or directly as a politician, right? So it's because think about it, in a free market, you have people who own lots of means of production. They're the capitalists. You know, they're still going to be competing for labor, right, with the other guys who's producing it. And even if they're the single service provider, there's still a freedom of entry into the industry. So if they start, you know, really treating their workers poorly and they're not as productive and their costs go up due to this, and the people aren't satisfied, the consumers aren't satisfied, then there's going to be a great demand for an alternative supplier or a substitute for whatever it is being supplied. And that's kind of keeps the treatment of the workers and laborers in check a lot, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of ways around this, but the reason why their criticisms are so accurate is because of the existence of this huge coercive institution known as the state, which sells its coercive powers to a lot of these big firms like the banks and the oil companies and whoever else you want to think about.
Who gets to write the regulations for their own industry.
Yeah.
You know, and they get to say what the rules are, and that way it makes it so you can't start up an oil company unless you've got millions and millions of dollars and a team of lawyers to get through all the red tape. Mm-hmm. You know, it literally prevents competition by increasing regulation. And people are told, well, we're regulating the oil industry now, so they're going to be less abusive. And it's like, that's not how it works. You know, the regulations themselves are the abuse. Mm-hmm. The oil company can't really be abusive to the people in a free market because they would lose business.
Right. So they make the regulations, which are expensive to comply with. And then the money they could have been paying their workers is now going to comply with these regulations. And then the death note is when they raise the minimum wage up. So now they can't even afford their employees, right?
Right.
So it's pretty fucked up all the way around.
That is pretty fucked up. And that's I'll never understand why lefties never see that as the issue. They always go out and say more regulation, more regulation.
Yeah.
Even though we get more regulation, nothing ever gets fixed and it gets worse and worse. And they just still don't see it.
Yeah. Some lefts, right? But same thing is true with a lot of free market people, you know, so-called free, like Romney's a free market guy, right? But he still says regulations are necessary for a free market.
And he still supports
the bailouts, the banks, and he still definitely supports the military industrial complex, which constitutes a huge distortion of the free market and is hugely wasteful, is the biggest big government program there is.
Right.
Right. And that's what most of these so-called free market people like, is the military industrial complex. I mean, it's on both sides, really. It's just lots of misconceptions everywhere.
Oh, exactly. I also think it's a great way to talk to communists about, or at least the anarcho-communists, is you talk to them about having a society in which there is no government, and in a society in which you can have just property rights, and you could do just that, make a commune. I mean, what better way for them to prove that communism works than to make their own commune and live those principles? You know, and they're not prevented from doing that in a anarcho-capitalist world.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case I've been making for the last couple months.
Yeah. So do we then spend time trying to befriend anarcho-communists?
Well, I would say sure, because typically we have the same ultimate goal, which is the end of the state. We just have a different idea as to what kind of society we would like to see. And we have to understand that everybody has their own different economic beliefs as to how a society should be run. And as long as they comply with the non-aggression principle, you know, you can create basically any kind of society that you know, complies with that. And you can, if you have any kind of economic philosophy.
That's right. The primitivist, the anarcho-feminist, whatever the fuck that is, the anarcho-communist, you know.
When you say anarcho-feminism, that just reminds me of like a whole bunch of really tall Amazon-looking chicks with mohawks and Molotov cocktails.
Yeah, so I'm agreeing with Mark. And, you know, Asheville is a great place to kind of start this, actually apply this methodology or this theory, because there's a fuck ton of anarchists here, lots of anarcho-communists and primitivists, who we can kind of bring them in to the fold under the guise of free market anarchism. We can all have our own economic systems within society without a coercive authoritarian structure, right?
Right.
And I think that's going to be a lot more amicable.
But I always wonder, though. I always see that within this, even within anarcho-communists that I talk to, that there's still this idea that at some point there's going to need to be a state. Because when I talk to them, they always seem to think that, all right, anarcho-communism would work on a small scale. But if you ever wanted to implement that society-wide, you're going to need to force people into it. And so I always wonder if there really is compatibility with anarcho-communism because of that. Because I always feel like they're going to end up in a state somehow, because they're going to need to start forcing people to live a way that seems unnatural.
Well, how I'd predict how it'd work out is that they would never really get really large. But they'd be most efficient when it was a smaller community, so everyone kind of knows everyone, so they can kind of keep them accountable and they kind of have an idea of what the things they need and what they're good at. You know, so I would imagine that these communes would stay relatively small and wouldn't really get very large. And even if they did get very large, it's irrelevant so long as they're voluntary. Because, you know, as soon as they become involuntary and they become coercive, it's going to drive a lot of members away. They're going to lose a lot of power and influence. And if they still have a lot of power and influence being coercive, if they still have influence then, that, you know, a lot of the prosperity and the technology and the defense agencies within the anarcho-capitalist society are going to be more than competent defenders of our way of life, despite
right
coercion being happening in these.
Right? Should we would we really be that worried with a bunch of like greasy hippies trying to, you know, come at our communities?
No,
well, I don't. They wouldn't believe. They wouldn't have any guns anyway. So,
right.
Probably be pretty easy to pick them off.
Mm-hmm. You just have to set your – you know how they have, like, heat detectors, like heat-seeking missiles?
Yeah.
It could be, like – what's that stuff all the hippies wear? Patchouli? Patchouli-seeking missile?
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. You know, every hippie I've ever met, or neo-hippie, they always smell like pot and patchouli.
Yeah.
I think that's been true since the 60s. A friend of mine has a country house up in the Catskills near Woodstock, you know, where the music festival in the 60s happened. So we've gone to Woodstock, and it's a crazy town. It's like those people from the 60s just never left, and a lot of them just kind of ended up living there. So you get a whole bunch of old hippies there, and every store you walk into smells like marijuana and patchouli.
Oh shit, man, that's crazy.
It is crazy. And their tie-dye shirts would be easy to spot from miles away. I think it'd be all right.
It's very true. I know. I kind of consider myself. I think I'm starting to become. I don't know if you've been seeing the gradual transformation. I think I'm starting to become a hippie myself.
Your hair is growing longer every time I see you.
Yeah, I like to think of myself as a capitalist hippie.
Yeah, you know, I actually kind of think of a lot of like libertarians, you know, especially voluntarists, as kind of anarchist. You know, capitalist hippies, you know, because they're very much into the kind of ideals of the at least the beginnings of the hippie movement, which is, you know, the peace, love, and voluntarism is all about, you know, peaceful interactions, peaceful parenting, all this stuff. So, yeah, we're kind of like hippies, only we shower more.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I'm starting to kind of border on that. I think I take a shower maybe once every 3 or 4 days now. I don't shave. Take a shower once every 3 or 4 days. I don't wash my hair anymore, and it actually looks great because my natural oils kind of condition it. I don't wear deodorant. You know, I smoke pot. I peaceful parenting. I don't wear patchouli. I haven't gone that far yet.
Yeah.
Need
some more tie dye.
Yeah, I don't wear tie dye either, so I'm not quite all the way there, but more and more it seems like.
I have nothing wrong with that. I could deal with that. I think that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
You know, people I was attracted to in college as friends were more like the hippie types anyway. I was a weird cat in the beginning of my college experience when I was still neoconservative. I kind of we went over this in the last show. I kind of dressed like I was, you know, an ex-cop kind of thing, you know, where I had the really, you know, close crop haircut and always wore khakis and like a tucked in shirt. Yeah, it was kind of bad. But all my friends, I was still attracted at that time to people who were much more laid back. So all my friends were like either like punk rockers or like these hippie types. So whenever we'd go out somewhere, I always felt like the odd man out because I was like very dude, conservatively dressed.
Hippie chicks and punk rock chicks are hot, dude.
Yeah, they are. They really are. I love punk rock chicks. Actually, I have a fan. I don't know. You might know her too. I don't know if we want to mention her on the show, but yeah, why not? She's been a good fan. Cassandra. She messaged me a couple of months ago about having listened to the show. And recently she just tagged me in a post that she's going to try to make it to Anarchy in New York City, which Chase and I will be at. So this is kind of cool. Like but anyway, she's kind of like this punk chick, and I think that's kind of hot.
Dude, you're going to get laid.
No. Oh, see, I probably shouldn't have mentioned this on the show.
Dude, you're so in. You know, like, you're so in.
Oh God, she's got a boy. She's got a boyfriend. I will be respectful. Besides, I think he's also a voluntarist, so I think that makes him cool in my book.
Well, hey, he can join in too. Be a party.
All right, that sounds awesome. That where's my commune? If I want a commune, man, I want to do it right. I want to have you know a whole bunch of hot young virgins that are just going to be like it is the duty. It is my religious duty to sleep with the cult leader.
That's what the Marxists and the leftists are missing, Mike, is they have to realize to make these collective communities work, there has to be mass orgies at least on a weekly basis.
Yeah. I don't know about communist orgies. I'm not sure I'd ever want to be in one of those. By the way, that's a great band name. I'm going to trademark that. Communist orgies.
Do you enjoy First Degree Liberty? If you do, you should share it. Pass it out to your friends. Give it to your family and share it with your neighbors. While you're at it, leave us some feedback by commenting right here on the Podomatic page or email us at firstdegreeliberty@gmail.com. Now sit back and enjoy First Degree Liberty with Chase Rachels and Mike Martelli.